Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Good. We're a little late getting at this. I was away this weekend at a hockey tournament coaching a team in the hamlet of Torrington, Alberta, home of the famous Gopher. I don't know. Is it
Gopher Hole Museum? Gopher Hole
Museum. But it was closed. I've been there three or four times. It's closed for the winter, but we had a hockey tournament there, and it was a lot of fun.
Thought maybe they'd have a special opening on Groundhog Day for you. Yeah. Speaking of Groundhog Day, today was yesterday all over again. I think we're back. We're stuck in that Bill Murray movie, eh, with the Oilers playing the same game 2 days in a row. Same outcome, same blown lead. Oh.
Well, at least they got two loser points. And I haven't seen yesterday's game, and I understand they played pretty well. Today, I don't think they deserve to win, Bruce. I don't think they were the better team on the night. They had a strong power play, but other than that, I mean, it's not like Montreal was great or anything, but the Oilers were not. They were pretty ragged. So, Bruce, what is your good thing from the game?
Well, my good thing is that Oilers power play. That scored two of the three goals and basically scored the third one because it was actually scored just 2 seconds after Max Domi, the game's first star, emerged from the penalty box for one of his two bad penalties in the game. And the other two were scored on the power play proper. Now, I will have to say the power play, it had a struggling start to almost each and every power play because they couldn't win a damn face-off to save their souls. This is a huge pet peeve of mine. And Montreal's first two power plays, they win the draw, and by about the 42nd mark of the power play, they've already peppered two or three good shots on net. And the Oilers, by the 42nd mark, they may be gaining the zone again after chasing the puck down to their own end from losing the face-off. But once they got in there, they were fine, and especially as the game went along, they got two very nice power play goals in the middle frame, and basically they scored their goals the same way they scored their goals yesterday, even though those were even strength goals. But they did the same thing. They went hard to the net, and they got the puck to the net front, and they battled, and they won some battles, and they pumped some pucks home. Who knew that you could play successful hockey doing that? I never heard of that approach before, did you?
We talk about it every game, before every game, between every period, and it is where the goals are scored, and every level of hockey is in front of the net.
Greasy goals from the dirty areas.
Every coach loves them. Yeah. The coaches love them most of all, I think. I mean, I think the players love the spectacular dangles and goals, but the coaches just love those greasy goals because that's how hockey games are won and lost. And the Oilers' power play, you know, they have two fantastic kind of half-court players, I think, is how I would describe them, in Nugent Hopkins and Draisaitl. Just very good, controlling the puck, making the right pass, very smart players. And McDavid, of course, is a hugely dynamic hockey player. So you add him to the mix. And Nurse is putting up a fair number of points. I don't particularly love him. I don't particularly love how the power play on the Oilers, Bruce, every time they get a pass, they dust off the puck. Yeah. There's always an extra puck handle in there, and there's such excellent players they can get away with that and still put up decent power play numbers. I don't know where they rank in the league. Are they kind of mid pack? Yeah. So I kind of wonder if with more of a just first touch passing kind of power play, kind of that Montreal exhibited on their first goal, how they might be, but nonetheless, incredible talent. And they're able to execute because of that tremendous ability, and good for them. Draisaitl. My good thing is Draisaitl, Bruce. I thought he was strong in the game. He was made a major contribution to 8 grade A scoring chances, which is phenomenal.
How many did the Oilers have as a team? 10?
Yeah.
And he was in on 8 of them.
I believe he was. So good for Leon Draisaitl. I always have liked him on his own line, and I understand the temptation to put him with McDavid. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. So Hitchcock went away. He had that long break, and he talked to all these people, and he came back with these new line combinations with the three centers. And that really worked for a time for McClellan last year.
Yes.
And I like it. I think it's probably the right idea. That said,
they're about five wingers short of having three good lines, eh?
Like, I don't have any good answers. I don't like, my bad thing is the line combinations. And I can't particularly. I guess what I'd like to see is Nugent Hopkins, Kara, and Puljujärvi were a good line. And mm-hmm. I never saw any evidence of why they should be broken up. They just were when Kyra got a suspension.
Yes.
Kyra got a suspension.
And they've never and been put back together put, for more than a shift or two.
Yeah, put those guys back together. Puljujärvi, to me, he's looking like he's ready to play. And put him, you know, I almost, listen, there's a huge cohort of Finnish fans out there who are weeping about what's going on with Puljujärvi in Edmonton. And when they saw him going out there with Kyle Brodziak and Brad Malone, come on. That is ridiculous. It's almost as ridiculous. I mean, how many times did we have to see Milan Lucic with Connor McDavid last year to realize that that ain't a great thing? Now, Lucic had a better game, I thought, tonight.
He was all right. Yeah.
He was okay, but it's, come on. That's another one. Just no, don't do that. I don't know who's giving him, you know, who is telling him to do that? Gary Dornhofer? Like, who's telling you play McDavid and Lucic together? Why are you doing that? We watch that. How many games? 50 last year, 40? Yeah. And it didn't work. It doesn't work particularly well. I like Ty Ratty with McDavid. I don't know who else you're going to put there.
That's the problem.
Toby Reeder.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about Leon being in on eight scoring chances. That doesn't include the four times he set up Toby Reeder and never got a shot away, so it wouldn't have counted as a chance. Four times. He had a breakaway. And three times he had the puck right in the low slot, right on the edge of the crease, and all he had to do was, like, basically hit the puck with his stick, and it would have at least been a shot on net, if not a goal, and he whiffed it every time, or he shoveled one wide and through the crease.
He's like a peak player playing bad.
He's turning the stick into sawdust, man, or whatever it is that happens to the composite when it was under extreme pressure.
Joe Gambardella on the farm team is ripping it up in the AHL right now.
Mm-hmm.
He hustles. He's scoring down there. Give him a shot with call him up and send Reeder down. I mean, it's not going to happen. It's not happening with Toby Reeder this year.
Well, yesterday he was legitimately absolutely robbed on a fantastic save by Carter Hart.
Okay.
One of the saves of the game. And it was just like, I was saying to my wife, he's just never going to score, you know, because he didn't even do anything wrong that time. He just, you know, the goalie made a phenomenal second save off of him. But today, you know, he just couldn't, he got in the right places and then he just couldn't do anything with it.
Kind of hurts to see these lines, you know.
It does. I mean, I'm rooting for Toby Reeder, honestly, but I mean, who would have dreamed? He's had 12 plus goals 4 years in a row. They have 0 goals in February. As an order.
I don't know what they're going to do, Bruce. Like, they just don't have the wingers. They don't have the wingers. And no. They don't have the D. They don't have the team. And, I had been optimistic for a long time about them making the playoffs. But if this is the best you can do, I mean, maybe if Klefbom comes back, they can capture some lightning in a bottle. You know, the teams they're competing with also have major holes in them, right? And it's just a matter of kind of team concept, playing well together and having an idea of how to play together and getting some good goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
So the Oilers have a bit of that team concept, I think, going a little bit, but the goaltending sure wasn't there tonight. Segue to your bad thing, Bruce.
My bad thing is the tying goal in the third period, the 3-all goal. And to me, that was goaltending. And to Ken Hitchcock, it was goaltending because Hitchcock singled out Koskinen for some fairly harsh criticism in the post game, saying, we played basically a perfect third period. We just needed a save. And Koskinen, he made two separate mistakes on that play. First of all, there was a puck that bounced around the back of the net, and he tried to cover it up, and then he failed to cover it. And then whatever reason, like he was looking over his shoulder, he was in the middle of the net, and the puck came out on one side, and he just never moved to that post, and he left the whole top side on the short side open for an easy shot. And all, you know, I mean, he's 6'7". You know, make yourself a little big there, and there's no place to put that puck.
You know,
Just
I
didn't have
think he
it.
was screened on the first one by Russell pretty effectively there on Weber's goal. But the second one,
Very effectively.
yeah, he was screened. And the second one I didn't like from him either. I mean, he did have to go to the side of the net, but that puck
He
went in off
overplayed it,
that puck went in off him. Like
eh?
he put it in his own net. So that wasn't good. And yeah, the winning goal was not good at all. He needed to smother that puck first of all. He was a little bit slow. Oh, you got a alien creature trying to come in here.
My 17-year-old dog, she just pushed the, left the door open, then she just pushed the door open and walked through it for literally the first time in her life. I've never seen a dog that was so completely flummoxed by doors. Well, every other dog I've ever had knows how to push a door open, even turn the handle, all kinds of neat stuff.
Kind of like Toby
Anyway,
Reeder with open arms.
yeah, anyway, she just did it, 17 years old,
Maybe that's a
so
good omen.
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who you call up. I would call up Gambardella. I would call up Marody. Like I know that you want players to ripen, but he was in college for 3 years, I believe. He is the same age as Connor McDavid. He's getting a point a game in the AHL, Cooper Marody, and I'd give him a try too. Like I liked him. I know that the word on him is he doesn't skate well enough, but he certainly handles the puck well enough. And he's a very smart player. Why not give him a try and give Gambardella another shot? I mean, they can't, you know, I really don't think that could get any worse than Lucic on the top line and Toby Reeder on the second line. So, where are we? You're number.
Well, I thought my bad thing with Koskinen, and I didn't mention the fact that he's now been below 900 in 10 of his last 13 games, during which time the team gave him a 3-year extension at 4.5 million to be their number one goalie. Like, you can't make this stuff up, David.
Just keeps
I
going.
think he's better than he's played in these 13 games, but I mean, that's a long stretch of being below 900.
Bruce, he looked pretty good at times in the game too. Like in the
At
first period, he
times.
was very good. There was lots of chances in that first period for Montreal, and the one goal that got by him, he was heavily screened by Russell. So, I guess Russell, he usually gets out there block his shots, but maybe even Chris Russell's courage may have failed him a little bit when Shea Weber's tee ended up there to go charging out to block that shot. So what's your number?
My number is 60. That is the combined number of goals scored by Connor McDavid, 31, and Leon Draisaitl, 29. They are the first duo in the NHL to hit 60 goals, so the top duo in the entire NHL, 60 goals for two players. This playing for the Edmonton Oilers, who are tied for 20th, a three-way tie for 20th with 148 goals. So even with the 60-goal head start from their two superstars, the team is just so. This is a good news, bad news stat. I mean, you got two guys that literally have over 40% of the team's goals to this point in the season. I mean, 60 goals for the two of them is phenomenal. They got all three goals today, and that's, oh, not the first time that's happened.
Well, they fired McClellan. They fired Shirelli. Maybe they should fire the guy who hired them. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Before he's given another shot at it. My bad. My
Stat.
number. My stat. I've done my bad thing. A number of them. My number is 9, and that is the winning streak. Or the unbeaten streak, at least. I'm not sure if they've won them all, of the Bakersfield Condors.
It's actually 10,
Oh,
and
is it
they're
10?
all wins. 10 wins in a row. They won two on the weekend.
Oh, I missed the second one then. Was that
Yep.
today? Or was that
I think
yesterday?
Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
And
10.
there,
X,
yeah,
that's
10 straight.
well, that's a really heartwarming kind of statistic. And the other really great thing about that is it's not being done on the strength of veterans, although they are getting contributions from older players like that
Don't win
Gagne
10 in
who,
a row without everybody contributing
yeah,
at
like
some
that,
point.
you know, like a Gambardella who's 25 and Russell, I think who's 24 or 25 are two kind of veteran players, veteran-ish, not by AHL standards because they're fairly new pros, but they're older. But I mean, it's pe people like Kate, no surprise to see them go on a winning streak when Caleb Jones heads back down there. because he is a fantastic hockey
player. Yeah, he got two goals, I think, last night.
Yeah. And they have Benson and Marody, who are both making major contributions. So
Benson's that's leading players. The team in scoring, 20 years old.
Yeah.
That's a real promising sign. I'm one among the very best news for Oilers fans this year, at least under the radar, is Tyler Benson.
Healthy and productive and doing well. Done. William Laugesen's getting good reports, a 22-year-old Swedish defenseman. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's my 10, I guess, is my number. And 10. That's a really encouraging number. Oh, and Shane Starrett, by the way.
Yeah, there's
been a narrative, which I think is that you can't trade Talbot because then if you trade Talbot, you have to get a goalie back because there's no one on the farm. Well, Starrett is 25,
mm-hmm.
I think. And again, he's played a lot of college
hockey. He's a new pro, yeah. He's a second-year pro.
So he played a full year in the Eastern Hockey, or whatever they call it, East Coast Hockey League. It's not
ECHL, yeah.
They don't want you to use that ECHL. They don't want you to say East Coast Hockey League, just ECHL for some reason. It's like the Ice District instead of the Ice District.
Because it's not on the East Coast anymore. It's everywhere.
I see. Okay, so he played there, and he's played most of the games in the more games than any other goalie in Bakersfield this year. I don't see why he can't be the backup for the rest of the year. He's not going to be any worse than Talbot, probably. And so if they trade Talbot, I don't know that they have to get a goalie back, but he's another really promising player there. Maybe he needs another full year in the minors to...
Maybe. I think he's already demonstrating that he's going to be worth a look at a decent shot at the backup role next year.
He'll be cheap, and he might be good. So yeah, there's a lot of players there that could help the Oilers, and maybe sooner than later. And we'll see if the Oilers drop out of this playoff race, which I'm kind of now expecting. Maybe we'll see some of these younger players, the next few games will tell the tale fully, but they could move out a number of players. Fingers crossed on a few of them at the trade deadline. I mean, we could see Cassian go. We could see Benning go. We'll see Manning go. Probably not. Reeder. Would anyone pick up Reeder? Maybe they would.
Hard to say. I mean, he's still got some pedigree. He's just obviously snake bitten beyond belief, and he's got some use as a player in terms of penalty killing and
14th forward. I mean, the Oilers. That's the thing. Like, they traded Strom, man.
Yeah, well, Strom. I mean, here's another situation for Strom today. Okay, we're in the overtime. They've gone through a shift with McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nurse. So now they got the second shift, and who are they going to put out there? Well, Nuge, obviously. So who else are you going to put out there? Well, our defensemen, we got a choice between Russell, Larson, Manning, Benning, then you've got Gravel, right? I mean, so they chose Russell. And then who are you going to put out as a second forward? Well, yesterday they put out Ratty, and he got burned on the winning goal. So today they put out Chiasson. Because the faceoff was on the right circle, they let Chiasson take the draw. He lost it. Puck went down the ice and in the net. You know who might be taking that draw on the right circle? Who's an actual right shot centerman who can frickin' skate? Is Ryan Strome. Instead, they got this real slow guy out there, and that Strome trade was one of, like, there's three or four this year that are just inexplicable, and that's one of them. I mean, they could really use that guy just because he was a jack of all trades.
PK, yeah.
Yeah, the PK. I mean, yesterday, when the PK got torched for four goals, I didn't see Ryan Spooner out there killing any of those penalties off.
Yeah, when Chiasson got put out there, the second I saw that, I knew what was going to happen, and I thought, oh, it's like when McClellan played Lucic.
Here we go.
You cannot play guys who are okay 5-on-5 but can't skate very well. On 3-on-3, it is a terrible idea. And that was a terrible mistake. Hitchcock wants to blame anybody for the game. Blame himself. Mm-hmm. Putting, and you know what? Chiasson, in theory, I have him down as partly responsible for that goal. He was so
besides losing
he was
face
so
off.
Slow on the on the back check. They just pulled away from him up the ice. Drouin cuts back into the middle of the ice.
And there's no one
and if
there.
You have a fast backtracking forward instead of some there who's like a half second too late, you might catch that guy. He might not have that move available to him. But no, Chiasson was a little bit slow. And I'm not blaming Chiasson. He was hustling back as hard as he could skate, but I'm blaming the coach. So don't have those slow. I don't know.
I'm blaming the GM.
I guess, yeah, blame the GM.
Training Strom.
Who could you put out there?
Strom.
Cassian?
Well, that was the problem. I mean, some people were saying, what's Russell doing out there? They should go with three forwards. And I'm going, yeah, Nuge and what other two guys? It's hard enough finding
well,
one guy.
I guess they can't play Puljujärvi because they don't want to add to his 3 minutes of ice time in the game. But
yeah, anyway,
I don't know what
you, put out. You run out of choices pretty fast because, as you say,
Reader can skate.
You need to be able to skate to play in overtime. And the Oilers have got about five forwards and two defensemen that can skate right now.
Reader can skate. They could have played him. Like, I know he's not going to score, but he's at least okay defensively. They could have gone with Ratty. I mean, Ratty can skate. And
they did that yesterday, and he got torched.
Well, he, among others, including McDavid, got torched.
On the winner.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. You'll see. You haven't watched that game yet. But
I got to watch.
Guy grabbed his stick and got away with it. But don't even get me started on the refing. Sorry, you did. Those two penalties Draisaitl took today, absolute criminal calls, both of them. Absolutely. Brutal. One for just standing his ground when the guy stood up to him and just bouncing him, and he gets an interference penalty. And then he gets tripped while breaking away 2-on-1 with Draisaitl, and the ref calls him for dive. What kind of an idiot would dive on a 2-on-1? I mean, it would be the stupidest play Draisaitl could make, would be to dive. Obviously, he didn't deliberately dive. I mean, get a ref with a clue out there. I mean, don't they understand the sport? Just terrible. Just an awful, awful call. I was myself when they called that one.
And even the color commentator, who was that, the analyst?
Gary Galley, Habs fan, he even thought that was a terrible call.
Yeah, and he made the same point you did. Like, he's on a 2-on-1. You really think he's going to dive? I mean, give your head. And he's on a 2-on-1
with McDavid. Yeah, no kidding. God. Yeah, let's dive so we can get a 5-on-4. No, how about we get a 2-on-1 with me and Connor? I think that's what we want first.
Yeah. Oh. Let's leave it there, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
I'm still mad 9 hours later about that call. Anyway, yes, let's leave it there. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.